Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Gentle Parents Unite podcast. I am here with my good friend and colleague, Sujai Johnson. Hello, Sujai.
Hi, Vivek. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to be back here recording with you. We took a little break. I think both of us were going through some life stuff. I've been dealing with family health issues and some mental health stuff, and I think you have been going through your own stuff too. So we took a break of a few weeks, but we are back, and this is going to be the first episode of season 7, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah, we really have been doing this for a little while now. Season 7, that's amazing.
Yeah, you know, between the two of us, we have quite a body of work that we offer to the public for helping guide their kids, and I think it's really great. Because it's hard. Mm-hmm. Parenting is hard. You know, we work with parents all the time, and we feel like people have to dig so deep into themselves to do this, especially doing it different from the mainstream, which is what we share, you know.
And, parenting can be very, very difficult. And I think that one of the most difficult aspects of parenting is actually all the contradicting conceptions and misconceptions out there on the topic of parenting, which can be really hard for parents to weed out the difference between what feels right and what feels wrong to them, and, you know, what's best for their children developmentally.
Yeah, for sure. It's unfortunate that a lot of the methods that are so commonly taught actually produce the opposite effect from what we want. You know, we want to help kids learn self-regulation, so we force them, and then it actually teaches them the opposite. And in so many different ways, we are going against the way emotions work, they're going against the way relationships work, but we've been programmed that way for so many generations, it's hard to shift those things.
I think that it's really worth taking a look at that. A lot of the mainstream parenting ideas and a lot of the old school parenting ideas don't really support healthy relational tools and healthy ways that we can interact with each other as adults. And the long term of the way that we are interacting, not only with our children, but the way that, you know, our children grow up to interact with other people. And one of our biggest hopes as parents is that our children do well in the world, and that they, you know, that they have friends and people around them that love them, and that they can hold a job. And a lot of that comes from learning these healthy relational tools and skills.
Yeah, for sure. You know, so often we hear on posts about consequences, because you and I always are posting about police parents don't use consequences and don't use punishments and all that kind of stuff. And so often people are like, but kids have to learn that when they go to a job, there's going to be consequences if they don't do what they're supposed to do. But the fact is, the people who excel at job, even if we're working towards jobs, I don't think the purpose of parenting necessarily is to prepare a kid for a job. But even if it is, the people who excel at jobs aren't the ones who just avoid consequences. They're the ones, like you said, they're the ones that know how to relate to people. They're the ones that care about the people they work with and are able to demonstrate that. They're the ones that can collaborate really well and do in creative problem solving. They're the ones who have this way of navigating those systems that, and being really effective. And you can't teach those things with force, right? Those things come from relationship, come from exploring life, come from exploring life together.
You know, understanding how to be aware of the human experience, and not only the experiences that we're having, but the experiences of those around us as well, and to deeply care for those experiences.
Because every person we work with is a person, like they're humans. You know, mm-hmm. Your boss is a human, your manager is a human, and your employees are a human. They're all humans, and we all have inner children, and we all are seeking compassion. And even if in a hardcore business situation, we can still humanize those things. And often, you know, my kid right now is working in an architect firm, and she's got a job and she's enjoying it, and she likes the people she's working with, and she's like very quickly becoming the favorite employee, not because she has like necessarily technical expertise in what she's doing, but because she really cares about the people she works with, and she cares about the work that she's doing, because she knows the impact it'll have on other people. Like when her manager says, "I need this done," she thinks, "Well, if I do this well, it'll take some of the load off my manager, and they'll feel better about what, you know, they'll feel good about the job that I did," and not, "I'm afraid of what'll happen if I don't," right? And so because she approaches it that way, they feel so supportive. And they're like falling all over her, all over themselves to with praise for her. And it's not because she received consequences. It's because she received deep relationship all through her life and deep communication. And you call them, what did you say? Relational skills, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we often as a society tend to focus on the don'ts. Don't do this, don't do that. You can't do this, you can't do that. And we forget very often that while don't is all fine and dandy, I guess. we're not tearing into that topic right now.
Right.
But it's really important to also focus on what we can do instead of what we should or shouldn't be doing, right?
You know my saying for that, right? The don't do and the do.
The do, that's right.
Here's what we don't do and here's what we do.
Let's do, yes. And you know, it's so important that we actually think about the different ways that we could be doing things and interacting with people in healthier ways, you know. And those relational skills, they range anywhere from, you know, being able to have a conversation where you're, you know, listening and hearing deeply and understanding each other without things deteriorating to fighting and explosiveness and name calling and things like that, or, you know, being able to be aware of our own emotions and not project them in ways onto other people that are unhealthy. And, you know, there's a whole gambit of relational tools and skills that we're really kind of forgetting to teach, because we're often teaching our children, you know, don't hit and don't do this and don't do that. And really, we were never taught ourselves the healthy ways to interact with other people. You know, another really important relational skill is about personal accountability and being able to hold ourselves accountable when we've made a mistake. And a lot of that, you know, accountability, it doesn't come from shame and blame and guilt and painful things. Yeah. Personal accountability actually feels really good when it's coming from our internal values, letting us know that we may have been a little bit out of step with ourselves and we're ready to come around to, you know, make things right in the best way possible. And it feels very good and empowering.
Yeah, you can't force someone to care about other people, you know. You can't punish someone to care about other people. You can't give someone a consequence if they don't care about someone, then something makes them care. Care comes from being in a caring relationship, experiencing what care feels like, and then seeing the positive impact of your caring on other people. And I think I think it's reasonable to want to help kids care about the impact of their choices and on other people. But we can't do that with wrongness. It just doesn't work. It teaches the opposite, you know. Recently, I posted an article about helping kids, not using consequences with kids and not using force and always looking for collaboration. And as kind of a little bit of a snide comment at the bottom, I said, please don't be the person who uses running into the street and getting hit by a car as an example. And a couple of people were like, well, okay, Vivek, you say that, but then what do I do? My kid is always running into the street and wanting to, you know, not paying attention. I don't know what else to do. And it really made me think of the don't do and the do. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think that there are so many ways that we can work with our kids that don't have those more painful aspects and do have the more model, the more communicative, connected, a peaceful way of working through things. And I want to tell a short story about that. A few years ago, I was visiting with a family, because I do family visits as part of my parent coaching stuff. And sometimes I'll do long-term visits where I move in with a family. It's live-in coaching. I'll move in for a week or two. And it's just like morning to night, we're working together. Those are really intense. And this was a day visit. I was visiting this family and they had a really rambunctious six-year-old. Super rambunctious and every all the time running into the middle of the street and not paying attention and running right between two cars, you know, where you can't see And then so the parent is always trying to hold them back. And it was a big struggle. And they were always saying, don't run to the street. You're going to get hurt. Don't run to the street. And then sometimes it would escalate. Sometimes it was more patient, but it wasn't affecting the kid at all. And it was quite exhausting for the parent. And I remember, and so then later on, I was alone with the kid and we were playing outside. And because I like to have some time with the kids too. And all of a sudden, they ran into the street and I was like, oh, this is my opportunity. So I ran into the street with them. There were no cars around. So I just ran to the street with them. And I said, wow, look how much space there is for us to play in the street here. There's so much space. It's so great. No wonder you want to run into the street and play. And they're like, yeah, look how much space there is. We can just run around. And I said, this is amazing. So we just played like tag or whatever. You were running around in the middle of the street. And right off the bat, you know, like people who are thinking, I'm trying to teach my kid not to run into the street would say, why are you playing in the middle of the street? You're making it more appealing. But right, that's the first part of working with kids is not going against their momentum, not going against their direction, but going with it first. Because once we're with them and they feel us with them, they're much more open to letting us guide them. So this is the first principle, I think, that's really important. So I immediately jumped in and we were having so much fun in the street. And then I said to the kid, you know how adults are always telling you not to run into the street? And they were rolling their eyes. Yeah. I said, let me tell you why. We're having so much fun right now. And playing with you is the most fun thing, don't you think? Yeah, it's so much fun. And so then I said, yeah, and you know what? Let me ask you this. What happens if you take a grape and you step on the grape? What's going to happen? And they went, the grape's going to go squish. I said, yeah, because you're so much bigger than the grape. And they said, yeah, I'm bigger than the grape. I said, yeah, it's the same with a car. You're compared to a car, you're little. And if a car hits you, you go squish like a grape. Now, here's the other thing. I was able to give them context for the experience, but not fear. It wasn't like if you get hit by a car, you're going to get hurt. It wasn't like that, right? It was more playful. I was using a playful imagery. I got them involved. We were like stomping grapes on the road and pretending we were stomping grapes so that there was that whole body feeling to it. And I said, and what happens then if you get squished like a grape is we can't play like this, and playing is so much fun. And I really want to protect your play because it's the best thing in the world. And they said, yeah, the best thing. I said, yeah. So, you know, here's what we do when we want to play in the road, because it's perfectly fine to play in the road. We want to check for cars so that we don't get squished like the grape. Doesn't that make sense? Yeah, that makes sense. So then we started to play and we were playing, but then we would like go between the cars and we would practice looking between. And then we started imagining, well, what are all the different things that could be coming? Maybe a dinosaur is going to come. Let's look both ways for dinosaurs. Maybe a plane is going to come. Let's look. Maybe it's a rocket ship. Maybe it's a dragon. And we were coming up with all these different things. And each time we did that, we would go between the two cars and we would look both ways. And then we would go into the road. And so through using going with their direction, we practiced this. The whole experience didn't last 10 minutes, maybe, you know, and then we went on. So then the next day we were outside with the parents and the kid suddenly took off to run between two cars like they always did. And the mom was like, didn't catch them, and they stopped and they suddenly looked both ways and then they went into the street and they crossed the street. And the mom was like, wait a minute. What did you just do? What just happened? They went, as if they'd always done it. They went, oh, I looked both ways before I crossed the street. They're like, why? Because they're almost upset. Because they're just the day before, they were so stressed. And they went, the Vic taught me. And that was one of my best moments. I love that moment. And it was a beautiful example of how we can use these principles of going with, using fun, using non-fear-based imagery that kids can really connect to, getting their body involved, using role plays. And you know, I wasn't above this person. I was with this person, and that made all the difference. And so I really want to, I really want to emphasize this idea that we think we have to go against and push against to teach them the things. But the more we go with them, the more we flow with them, and then just gently guide that flow. That's why my saying is, Don't guide your kids like the banks of a river guiding the flow, not like a dam stopping the flow. And this is something that's so beautiful. And I've had so many, I mean, you and I both have had so many experiences of working with kids using this kind of principles it's just so amazing to watch how easy it is and how much flow there can be with kids when we operate that way.
Yeah, you know, when it comes to kids running into the street, which it's such a topic that almost makes me giggle because it's one of those cliche topics or cliche lines that people throw out when we try and talk about parenting without coercion and right. imposed boundaries and limits and things like that. And so I almost kind of laugh every time I think about the idea of, you know, oh, so you just let your kids run into the street, you know, simply because we don't coerce or, you know, impose with force doesn't mean that we aren't teaching. And you know, there's different scenarios as to a person running into the street, right? If a child is running into the street and they're in imminent danger, then we would certainly grab them up and move them as quickly as possible,
right?
With whatever, you know, amount of shocked momentary force that we had in our bodies, you know, we would grab them up and move them out of the street. And
yeah, it's like when you saved that kid from falling in the fire.
Exactly. Yes. I can tell that story. You know, my nephew, we were on the beach a few years back and my nephew had fallen into the campfire and I saw him fall. So I grabbed him by the front of his robe and just, I flung him down the beach because he was on fire. And like, I kind of threw him onto the sand and he looked up at me and he said, thank you, you know, because I saved him and he didn't actually get very burned and you know, had a couple really small burns on him. And it could have been an incredibly tragic thing. And in that moment, we do what needs to be done, certainly. And anything short of that is a little bit less of an emergency. And if we can calm ourselves enough that we're not in that space where we're scolding, you shouldn't go into the street, and oh, that is so dangerous, and you know, we've got all of this like internal stuff we have all of this internal stuff around it that can come out sounding very preachy and lectury, and in ways that, you know, no person, you know, children included, really want to absorb information when somebody.
I'm already rolling my eyes just saying lecture. Yeah, I'm already rolling my eyes. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to. Nobody wants to hear that, right?
Nobody wants to hear it. Our listeners certainly don't want us to be lecturing them on gentle parenting, right? We're here to share the ideas and topics, and we're not gonna wave our fingers and tell you you're bad if you're not doing things the way that we're doing things, right?
So yeah, because that wrongness doesn't really inspire us to want to be our best selves. It doesn't inspire us to want to tune in to the other people in our environment and really care about them. Wrongness never does that, you know. And
right,
this is why I always say no wrongness, no wrongness. It's even for myself, when I notice myself projecting wrongness onto me, I'll just start yelling out, no wrongness, no wrongness, no wrongness, just so like I fight it back, you know. And then like even waking up people in the house, they're like, well, oh, Vivek's yelling no wrongness again. And but I become like fanatical about it. I don't want wrongness in my consciousness. Wrongness is different than remorse, right? So when I hurt someone or I do something that, you know, is out of alignment and it causes someone to feel hurt, I care about that. I want to care about that. I care about that because I care, because I love, because I want that kind of attention to my relationships. But that's different than wrongness. You know, I care and I feel bad that I did that, but I do that from a perspective of knowing that I'm a loving being that's doing their best in difficult circumstances with a lot of stuff in my own past. So I give myself compassion and I feel bad. And so it's very different, but that's not something you can force. That's something that arises out of my own conscience, out of my own relationship with myself, out of me thinking, what kind of person do I want to be? What kind of relationships do I want to have? What kind of impact on the world and on other people do I want to have? And this is what I call the self-reflective questions. You know, there's a whole bunch of self-reflective questions that we can help kids explore without imposing on them what the answer should be. That's why when we say, oh, how would you feel if someone hit you? There's already a predetermined answer there. We're telling them how they should feel. And that doesn't really give person the freedom to look within and really feel their own conscience, feel their own sense of values.
Right. I fully agree. And you know, when a child is in the less than emergency situation, wanting to run into the street, we have so many options for how we can approach that situation, right? In the emergency situation where they're actually there running into the street, we respond with, you know, however we need to respond to keep that body safe. And in the less than emergency situation, we have, you know, the role playing and the improv. One thing that I really like to do is really get down on the child's level and explain to them, like from a point of view where we're like, the world is a magical place and we're checking out all the magic in the world. And, you know, we're showing them the trees over there and the roads over there. And, you know, the cars use the road and the people use the walkways and sit under the trees. And, you know, we can show them the way that the cars come down the street and how they're coming down the street. And we can point out different things about the situation that we're in and really bring it into their consciousness and bring them into their surroundings and their situation. We can talk to them about, you know, specific feels like the wind on our face and the sun and, you know, whether we're chilly or not and all of these different aspects. Well, you know, really bringing them into this picture of the space that they're in and this magical surrounding that it is, and sharing with them and showing them, pointing out all of the things. Well, the conversation, you know, is also about the road and the cars and how when we're down really low, a high up car, the way that, you know, it's pretty interesting. It's kind of, you know, like digging into the way that things work and stuff. When a car is high up, they can't see things that are down really low because it's below their point of vision. And so it's really hard for a car to see you. And we can talk about how, you know, cars, they're going really fast, so it takes a long time to stop. And, you know, and instead of that being a fear factor, like, you know, like you were saying about when you were playing with the child, it wasn't from a place of fear. We come from a place of interest where we're sparking that love of learning. Yeah, children, yeah. Their brains are like growing constantly. They're in this state of growing and they're going through this osmosis where they're completely absorbing everything around them. And they're tuned, hyper tuned to learning and to taking in their surroundings. And they very much enjoy understanding things like trajectory of vision and, you know, the distance it takes something big to stop and all of these really interesting facts about the world around us. And when they know that fact, and they take an interest in that fact. Wow. So you mean if I get up high, but when I get up high, I can see things a lot more clearly. So how is it when you're in a truck? Oh, because the front of the truck can block your vision of things down low. And, you know, we can discuss all of these different aspects of why things turn out exactly that way. And that's science. And that is really exciting for children to learn and take on. And so instead of feeling lectured, they genuinely feel like they're learning, because they are, they're learning something new and interesting about this world that they're in. And when they've learned these new facts, they're far easier to retain because they're exciting.
Yeah, they're not geared towards telling the kids that they're wrong and what they can't do, but it's more about exploring how wonderful life is and how interesting the world can be. And, you know, one of the great things about approaching things that way, Sujai, is that we actually make learning with us a joy, as opposed to make learning with us a drag, which is what so often happens, right? So often kids at a very early age, they find that learning from their parents is a drag. And then they don't want to do it.
Learning,
you know,
from a lot of teachers in today's society can be a drag too. Yeah. I very much thought as a child that I hated learning. And the approach of most adults in home and school setting really kind of turned me off from the entire, like, you'd say the word learning and I was like, nope, not for me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until much later in life that I came to learn that learning is one of my deep passions.
Yeah.
I genuinely like thirst for knowledge on a regular basis, and I really take it in and suck it up, and I like to learn interesting facts about the world around me, like the trajectory of sight from the top of a pickup truck, you know.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's different. It opens your eyes to how the world works, and you know, taking in all of these different things from that aspect where learning is fun, learning is exciting, learning has the ability to open our eyes to a lot of different things. And in the long run, when we're open to learning and we have not been kind of jaded against it and turned away from it, learning can genuinely make us a more, I don't want to say better person because I don't believe in, but a more open-minded person when we're constantly in that growth mindset of wanting to gain knowledge along the way.
Yeah. You know, when I was a kid, I had this thing about setting fires. I really liked setting fires when I was young, and I would light anything on fire I could. And sometimes my parents would find like boxes of Kleenex and stuff in the basement that I had lit on fire because I was always trying to hide it, right? Because I knew I would get in trouble. And they eventually took me to a psychologist because of it, actually. And that and a few other things. and I don't know, he made me draw pictures or whatever. And then he would send me out and talk to my parents. And one of the things that they suggested, and I still shake my head when I think of actual professionals suggesting things like this, but one of the things they suggested was buy a box of 1,000 matchbooks and make little Vivek sit there and light every single one from all the way from the top to the burn every match down. And by the time he's done, he'll be so sick of fire, he'll never light fire again. This is like the maximum understanding that they had back in the 70s, I guess. Anyway, so... Or maybe I should just say this particular psych. But in any case, that they did that. They thought, okay, well, let's do it. And like halfway through, three quarters of the way through the box, I was still having so much fun. They just gave up on the whole thing, and it didn't work. And I just kept lighting fires, you know. And so they never were able to impact the behavior. So then, fast forward decades, and my kid comes along, and she's 4, and all of a sudden, I notice her lighting fires, the same kind of thing. And I said, and immediately I was like, okay, time to do things differently, Vivek, time to break the cycle, trying to change the pattern, right? So I said, hey, kiddo, I noticed you like have been trying to light things on fire. And she was like, yeah. And I said, you know what, let's do that together. And I said, let's do it in a way that we can make a really big fire and we'll take pictures and it'll be so much fun. I said, here's what we do. We're going to make a tinfoil bowl and we're going to go in the bathroom where nothing can catch fire. So we're safe because, you know, there's in the living room, there's like wooden chairs and there's papers everywhere, but in the bathroom, it's all tiles. And we'll make sure that we have some water on hand so that we'll in a big glass of water so that we can douse it if we want to. And then we'll just like light all sorts of stuff on fire. So then all of a sudden fire play became this beautiful connecting thing between the two of us. And we'd go into the bathroom and we would light these fires and we tried to burn all sorts of things. And some things would smell really terrible when we burned them. So we wouldn't do that again. And we would use, and you could light hairspray and hairspray would light on fire. And we bought a bottle of lighter fluid and did it. But the thing is, because this was such a connecting experience, she almost never had the impulse to light a fire without me. Anytime she wanted to, she would come over running to me. Hey, Dad, I thought of something to light on fire. Let's do it together. And it became this thing that we learned together. And my kid's 24 now, and it was literally just like last year or so that we were doing this, and she was so happy, and we took pictures of it, and she had videos, and she actually posted the video on her Instagram account, and she said, "This is me and my dad lighting fire." Like it was a source of pride for her, you know. And we can make learning like this with our kids something so joyous. At the same time, like you said, you know, we were learning about real safety, around fire safety. And so here's my kid, a 4-year-old, who without any resistance really took in the idea of fire safety, and it mattered to her and she cared about it, you know, and it really made sense to her. And it was never something that obstructed her joy, obstructed her fun. It wasn't about that. It was, here's how you think about it so you can enjoy it. And that's a huge difference for me in how we relate to kids, is that we frame things in a way that make it sound like, even if it's not our intention, we make it sound like, and we make it feel like we're obstructing their fun, obstructing their freedom, obstructing their joy, obstructing their learning and their creativity and their exploration and their curiosity. And if it feels like it to them, and I keep emphasizing feel, because, you know, our intention is, it's good to have good intentions, but if we're, the way we're coming across and the way we're presenting our message is making them feel like we're the obstacle, then we're the obstacle. That's it. You can't convince someone you're not an obstacle if they feel like you're an obstacle. They have to actually feel like you're not an obstacle. And I think that's so beautiful. It was the same thing with knives. When she would grab a knife, I never grabbed them away from her. I mean, unless she was like aiming it at her eye and running towards a wall, but that's what you said about the imminent emergency, right? But when it wasn't the imminent emergency, we talked about all the different parts of the knife and how to hold them. I mean, she was probably like, you know, 6 or 7 years old when we were practicing flipping knives and catching them by the handle and like really dangerous stuff. And we would throw knives at whenever we got a watermelon, we would throw knives at the watermelon. And then when it would bounce off, we would like jump out of the way. But like, we were always learning about how to manage these things in life rather than avoiding them. And kids are fully capable of engaging with us in that kind of exploration.
Yes. Yes, they are. We often don't give them nearly enough credit for that. It's interesting because a lot of times we do tend to want to limit children from doing things that we perceive as dangerous. You know, I think the internet is a really good example of that. A lot of times people talk about the dangers of the internet and how, you know, we should be limiting screen time for children and keeping things a certain way around screen time, when really, you know, for me, it feels like the conversation would be far better placed and used around how can we safely navigate the internet without running into some of the dangers that might be present on the internet? And if we do encounter some of those dangers or some of the downsides of the internet, how do we navigate that situation? How do we keep ourselves safe? How do we work with something that we saw that might have been, you know, really intense for us or hard for us to see? How do we, you know, basically work through any of those situations that might come up around the internet and essentially navigate that situation with safety instead of turning away from the internet completely and saying, because danger exists there, we're never going to go there? You know, a lot like knives, because danger exists there, a lot of people want to hold that away from their children. I taught my children how to properly use knives and help me in the kitchen at very young ages. You know, by the time they were able to hold them properly and pay attention to where to keep their fingers and stuff, my children were all very happy to learn how to use knives. And, you know, we navigate all kinds of things in that way. And some of those things we understand or accept more clearly, like cars, for example. We recognize that cars are dangerous. We know that cars have actually one of the highest death rates of anything worldwide. And yet we recognize that they're a part of life. And so when we go around cars, we take some security measures and we go ahead and use them as part of our everyday lives. You know, we have car seats, we have seat belts, we have our specific protocol for being in the car. You know, when we get into our car, we put on our seat belt, we adjust our mirrors, we follow the safety rules of the road mostly. and we go about life navigating and interacting with cars in very healthy ways, because, or in the safest ways that we possibly can, because we recognize they're dangerous and we recognize that they're also a part of life. And I think that that is really the big key, right? Is learning how we can navigate difficult situations in the safest way possible. And, you know, without a lot of extra ideas that we may be putting onto a situation that might be coming distinctly from us, and allowing our children room to build their own value systems and ideas around these things, and helping them learn the safety so that they are able to build their own value systems and navigate these things.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, what I talked about at the beginning is, I think, a good kind of system or way of thinking about how to get into these discussions with our kids. So the first one is, whether it's the internet or knives or running into the street or whatever it is, the first one is, wherever our kids are at with this particular thing, to join in with them around it, not for them to feel like we're opposing them, but we're with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps them feel like, one of my sayings is, when we're willing to join our kids in their universe, they become more willing to join us in ours.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah. And then once they feel us with them, then we can use imagery and play and role plays and some of the other things that you mentioned too earlier, in curiosity and exploring the different aspects and exploring the physics of things, the psychology of things, all the different things. We can do it in a way that feels non-fear-based, but still very informative, explaining the cause and effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then relating the cause and effect to things that matter to them, like I related it to play and to keeping, allowing ourselves to play, to get more of what we want. I call it WIFM, which stands for what's in it for me. And when we can help kids with their WIFM, with understanding what's in it for them, like what, like, so that, again, it's so that they feel it, not just that we're telling them like a lecture, like a voice, you know, this is, but when they actually feel like, oh, this will bring me more joy in my life, more fulfillment in my life. And so we tailor the way we explain the things so that it helps them see that, you know, this is something that's going to actually benefit you. And then we practice, you know, and we practice in different ways, and we practice in fun ways, and we practice in ways that that the kid is engaged in. And we use, and practice can happen in all sorts of different ways. There's mental practice, there's bringing the emotions and feelings into it, there's the relationship that's happening at the time, there's the physical aspect of the practice, and how was the body being used. And then sometimes we practice in the actual environment, but sometimes we can practice like with our imagination, and there's so many different ways. And then you take all of that and then you repeat as necessary, being careful to watch yourself for wrongness. And when you do feel like there's wrongness coming, to bite your tongue, take a few deep breaths, recenter, maybe leave the topic altogether for today, leave the topic and then come back to it later, and when you feel more centered, ending a conversation when you feel the tension creeping into your system is one of the best parenting strategies I can recommend.
Mm-hmm.
I'll even change what I'm saying mid sentence, or run away from a thing mid sentence if I notice I'm about to be pushing my kid, or if I notice them closing up, because it works against us. And so feeling, you know, like taking this approach to working with our kids, we can help them and guide them in a way that feels so good to them. You know, I mean, even just I was saying my kid's 24, and even just the other day, I went to her place. She's almost completely moved in with her girlfriend at this point. So I'm in a whole different stage of life right now. and I went over to their place, and we went for a walk around the neighborhood, and we came to this park, and there's a swing set. And one of the things that I've always focused on, as you can tell from what I'm talking about, is play with my kid, you know, and using play in every single circumstance. And even at 24, it hasn't changed. And we were like, hey, let's get on the swings. And there were no kids around, so we weren't like kicking kids off the swings. And so we got on the swings. And ever since she was very young, we would always explore the physics of swings and all sorts of things, right? And so we would, I like that. We explored the physics of swings and all sorts of things. It rhymes. And,
it's very catchy.
Yes. Anytime wisdom can rhyme, it's always more true. And
at least a lot more fun. And that really makes learning that much better.
Exactly. And so as we're swinging, so we're swinging and we're doing like we've spent decades between the two of us studying how to swing. So, and like we're going almost horizontal, the chain's going almost horizontal, right? That's how we do it. And halfway through this big swinging and we're laughing and laughing, I started yelling out, physics, physics, because I was like, and she was laughing because she remembered how we always, exactly what you were saying, Sujai, we're so similar. We always related everything to physics or philosophy or psychology or relationships or communication, but not in a drag way. Like this was a fun way to learn about physics. And at the end of it, she was like, Dad, you know, I just noticed the way we swing is so similar because you taught me so long ago and I made it my own. And it's just like so wonderful. And what I loved about that is her memory of learning with me was so positive that even at this age, she still values it, treasures it, you know? And I think this is something that I think every one of you parents that are listening to this right now, you can achieve this with your kid. It might require some shifting of patterns. It might require some letting go of things that you've been holding on tight to. It might require some extra trust in your kid and their learning process. But if you think about the long-term effect of having a lifelong learning relationship with your kid, and especially if it's mutual and they feel they're learning from you as well, it's worth all of the effort because it's something that gives us such a beautiful relationship. And like I said, it can last through your whole lives, really. And it's such a beautiful way to reframe the guiding, teaching, parent-child relationship from the authoritative one to a more collaborative one where things are more shared equally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And that collaboration, the connection is where the collaboration exists. And the more we can connect with our children on a deep and fundamental level, the more that we're able to collaborate with them and the more that they're able to collaborate with us.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you, Vivek, for all of your thoughts and ideas on this topic. I think that it's been really helpful for me, and hopefully our listeners will really enjoy hearing our ideas about the collaboration and how we can work together with our children to really help them learn things as opposed to being coercive and aggressive with our children. So thank you for being back and recording with me. I'm really excited that we're here at season 7. And for anybody who is wanting to work more closely with Vivek or myself, or Vivek and myself, you can find us at www.gentleparentsunite.com/membership. We have a monthly membership program. We have weekly group calls. We have a weekly meditation and a live parenting workshop. It's all very interactive. You get to talk and communicate with real people and interact with us on a firsthand basis where you can, you know, ask questions about what you're going through and get coaching to go through that situation. You can also find us on Facebook at Gentle Parents Unite, and you can follow Vivek at Meaningful Ideas on pretty much any platform. I know Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Is that all, or are there more, Vivek?
YouTube.
And,
yeah, and meaningfulideas.com.
Aha. And there you have it. So, and all my work is available in the Gentle Parents Unite spaces. And we look forward to working with you all. And thank you again for being back with me today, Vivek.
Yeah, wonderful. I appreciate your patience while I needed some time to kind of sort my life out. And I'm glad to be back with you again, Sujai.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we all need time to reset sometimes. And I know that you've been going through a lot. And there have been some health issues and things like that that have been causing a lot of concern. So I'm hoping for the best for everybody moving forward.
Thank you. I love you, my friend. And we love all of you, and we will see you next week.
All right. Perfect. Thank you all.